Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along on this Friday morning, December the 7th. It's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock, and it's time for the Week in Review. We will talk with two guests from different perspectives about the big news stories of the week, and we welcome your observations from the news this week at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. If there's an issue that occurred this week in the news that you would like our two guests to discuss, call it in. We will move around from national to state to international news. No particular order today, but covering the top stories of the week as our guests see them and as you see them. We are happy to have with us Dave Blaska. He's now a blogger, contributing writer to Isthmus, Madison's alternative newspaper, former Dane County supervisor, former spokesperson for former governor Tommy Thompson. Dave Blaska joins us in the studio. Good morning.
I'm a former farmer, too, so that's a lot of farmers.
And your current blogger at Blaska Blog.
Yes, I've been up for 5 weeks now, and I just didn't want to be the last guest on your program not to have a blog.
Yeah, that's so. Right. Everybody has a blog. I don't know if Tony Palmieri has a blog or not.
Yes, I do.
You do?
Absolutely,
all right, Tony. Yeah. I'm sorry we haven't plugged that. Tony Palmieri, Associate Professor of Communications, member of the Oshkosh Common Council, media columnist for the Fox Valley's alternative newspaper, The Valley Scene. And we can find your blog where, Tony?
It's called Talk to Tony.
Talk to Tony. All right. Hey, speaking of blogs, this is not the most important news story of the week, but it's an interesting one, and it has to do with blogs. There was a decision this week. The Washington County DA decided not to press any charges against, it turned out he was a suburban Milwaukee teacher who posted on bootsandsabers.com. He posted on that blog. We know Owen Robinson, a regular guest on this program, is the co-founder of that blog. He posted a comment that seemed to praise the Columbine shooters and criticize teachers. And anyway, there was an investigation. The West Bend police arrested him for making what appeared to be a threatening comment. And then it turns out that he was making it in sarcastically, and he was not charged. Did you hear about that, Tony Palmieri? What did you think about the furor over his arrest and the possible charges that he faced?
I think that teacher should be made to stay after school and write on the board 1,000 times, "I will not be an internet troll. You know, I will get a life."
Yeah, he was trying to, according to Owen Robinson, he thinks trying to make conservatives look bad by posting an outrageous comment.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of outrageous for him to be arrested. I mean, it's clearly First Amendment protected speech. But in all seriousness, I think the blogosphere has almost been ruined by this kind of anonymous kind of trolling. That's what I find disturbing. Up here in Oshkosh, we have a fairly active political blog circuit, and almost all the bloggers have had to suspend comments, or they've had to heavily moderate them because of this kind of anonymous sniping. So while I think it was outrageous for him to be arrested, and I think it's protected speech, and I'm thankful that there's not going to be a prosecution, I do think we need to do something to clean up the blog spaces and make them a public space for rational discourse. I don't know how to do that.
Yeah, do you know how to do that, Dave?
Oh, absolutely. just ask and I can tell. Well, actually, Tony, I sympathize a little bit, too. I think this teacher was trying to be, and I'm forgetting his last name, but he wrote a modest proposal about the Irish and how they should be eaten, stewed, and whatnot. And he was, you should know Tony, as being an English professor in, I think, the 1700s, he wrote a modest proposal. I suppose that's what this guy is trying to do. But there's no incitement to riot. I would be looking, though, at his essays, if he writes any for his class and for other clues. But what we do at the Isthmus here is that any comments on my blog have to be by full name, by real name. And I've always put my name out. Now, there is a section in the forum where you can, and I presume you're having that too, where you have various nom de plumes. There's a fellow by the name of Bob Laffalot. I mean, I love these little handles that people have. And that's anonymous, but I think there's a little different rule there, and they get pretty vicious. And when my blog emerged 5 weeks ago or so, the Isthmus Forum just went crazy with, you know, how did they let this intruder in? By the way, Tony, this teacher trying to make conservatives look bad, we don't need any help.
That's it. Dave and I agree on one point today.
Well, and again, speaking of blogs, this in this morning's State Journal, Dave Blaska actually pointed this out to me. I hadn't heard this, that former Madison Mayor Paul Soglin is in a little bit of hot water from bikers because he wrote, the bicyclists who braved this week's second storm, snowstorm, should be taken out and shot. Spare them and the poor driver when they skid on treacherous streets and slide under the wheels of a truck delivering fresh vegetables. Well, you want to make headlines like that too, Dave?
Yeah, he's got a better PR person than I do. I think he's getting his blog out there, and you know, whenever he can get named or noticed. Owen Robinson with Boots and Sabres got some PR off that. That's how you do that, I guess. But it does scare me to see. In fact, I drove in today a little bit of white knuckle trying to make it on time here. I'm in the studio and. You know, and you do see pedestrians out there, and you're hoping that you see them in time and you stop and you're not sliding or skidding.
Yeah. Tony?
Former Mayor Soglin, I think, was clearly being satirical, and I think that's different than the you know, the anonymous sniping on the blogs.
Well, with Paul Soglin, too, I don't think he's a very good aim, so you don't have to worry. He's not a gunman, okay? He's, you know, definitely death on the Second Amendment, so...
Yeah, well, let's move on to maybe some more substantial stories here. Not that those weren't interesting.
Anytime I get a chance to trash Paul Soglin, I'm going to take it. let's face it.
Let's talk about the CIA is in the news today, admitting that it destroyed a couple of tapes that apparently had some terrorist suspects being waterboarded. What do you make of that, Tony Palmieri?
Sadly, it's not surprising. I mean, the idea that the CIA and the Bush administration has destroyed evidence is something almost to be expected. I think the Congress should look at this vigorously and look for accountability. I mean, it's time for people in the Bush administration to start losing jobs over incidents like this. And so I do hope the Democratic majority in both houses of the Congress really do step up the pressure at this point.
There's a fearsome concept there, the Democratic majority in Congress. Wow, I'm just quivering right now. But I Tony, in all seriousness, if you tell a federal judge that these tapes don't exist and then they did exist and you destroy them, that should be actionable and that should be criminal.
You're saying, Dave Blaska, that that someone should be in trouble over this?
Absolutely. You don't lie to a judge. And you know, if we had these tapes and we didn't want to disclose them, you make that case. And certainly, I think the Bush administration has made that case. I'm going to guess that someone was being overzealous and should have said, "We'll make this stand in court. We'll say we have them, but it's national security." That case has been made before, and it can be made again. It should have been made, but it wasn't.
Yeah. Do you think someone should be in trouble over President Bush and others in the Bush administration talking about the possibility of World War III should Iran get a hold of nuclear weapons technology, and then we find out with this new NIE, National Intelligence Estimate, that that Iran stopped its nuclear weapons program in 2003?
Well, you know, it's interesting there because obviously the corollary is the weapons of mass destruction, and there we said they had them and they didn't. Here they're saying we now find out they don't have them. But they're in the New York Times just yesterday, a couple of policy wonks, foreign policy wonks, are saying they probably do have them. Think about this. Why is Iran trying to get nuclear energy? They're sitting on a pool of oil. I mean, it's free. They just, you know, they can heat themselves with that. It's not like France, you know, which has to use waves and nuclear energy or Wisconsin. So I guess I think this helps the credibility of the president, that his intelligence agency came out and said, you know what, we've got more information. Now it doesn't look like they have it, but there are people who don't believe that, not just in the Bush administration. I guess my bottom line is I'd still rather have a false positive, as we did with the WMDs, than a false negative, and then wake up some morning with a nuclear winter going on.
Tony?
The president's become somewhat frightening. After the NIE report was released, if you listen to the president's statement, he suggested that the knowledge necessary to make nuclear weapons is as dangerous as actually having them. And by that criteria, the president is literally at war with the entire world. I mean, you know, someone on the Huffington Post said that if you Google, you can find out knowledge of how to make an atomic weapon. And so it's almost like he's extending the preemption doctrine to an absurd extent. And now that we find out that, in fact, you know, he did have this information, the NIE information, with him at the same time he was making these World War III comments, you know, it's extremely troubling. And I disagree with Dave. I don't see the president's credibility helped in any way by this. I think we're going to see him go even lower in opinion poll ratings, and he, you know, he really has no political leverage in his last year in the presidency. His credibility is shot, in my judgment.
Do you think this new report, Tony, will put an end to the talk about a possible military strike against Iran?
No, not as long as the president is saying that knowledge, the knowledge necessary of how to make a weapon, is as dangerous as having WMDs. I mean, I expect the saber rattling to continue.
Well, you know, even Barack Obama, you know, didn't rule out a preemptive strike on Iran. So, I mean, I don't know that we can say, you know, any world leader of any stature at all who rules out military has basically cut off his negotiating ability. You have to keep that card face down, but it has to be there, and the other side has to know it's there.
We are reviewing the news of the week with Dave Blaska and Tony Palmieri, and we have an open line for you if you'd like to call in with a topic from the news this week at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Do you have anything to say about this report on Iran and its nuclear weapons program, that it halted this program back in 2003? Anything to talk about when it comes to the presidential race? The Democrats debated in Iowa this week, and the race is certainly tightening up in Iowa. What about what's going on in the state of Wisconsin? We welcome all of your comments at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I think it is very important for the international community to recognize the fact that if Iran were to develop the knowledge that they could transfer to a clandestine program, it would create a danger for the world. And so I view this report as a warning signal that they had the program, they halted the program. And the reason why it's a warning signal is that they could restart it.
President Bush reacting to the report that said Iran halted its nuclear weapons program in 2003, saying that Iran was, is, and will continue to be a threat. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. One of the items in the news this week that we are reviewing with Dave Blaska, who is a blogger and a contributing writer to Isthmus, and Tony Palmieri, an associate professor of communications, also a media columnist for the Fox Valley's alternative newspaper, The Valley Scene. And we have a caller on this topic, Kyle in Delavan. Hi, Kyle. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I just wanted to make a comment regarding Iran, and I just it's absolutely terrifying to hear people already throwing a term around like World War III. I mean, these are the same people that told us Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. These are the same people that told us Iraq would be a cakewalk. These are the same people. I just don't know what is in their head. I think we need to absolutely not believe anything coming out of the neocon establishment. We need to definitely just keep our nose out of the internal affairs of other nations. And in regards to the presidential election, I can't wait for Ron Paul to sweep the primaries. So.
All right, thanks very much, Kyle, for getting in that plug too. Well, Tony, you want to react to his comments?
I agree with much of what Carl said. I think the neocons have had their day in the Bush administration. They've failed. Their foreign policy, the doctrine of preemption, as shown in Iraq, has failed, and yet they want to pursue, it seems, mm-hmm. the same course in Iran.
Tony, are you telling me that the surge has failed in Iraq?
I think clearly the surge has failed. I mean, Anybody who looks at Iraq seriously realizes that the problem is a political one. The problem is not a military one, and yet the president has chosen to keep it as a military problem.
When that's like telling Abraham Lincoln that the Civil War was a political problem, not a military problem. It was a military problem. It's very often, yes, they're caused by political problems, but the fact of the matter is that the killings in Iraq are down to lows that we haven't seen in almost 4 years. I think they had 37 civilian deaths in November when we were having several hundred a month previously, and it's gone down to, and with a concomitant decrease in American soldiers' death. And it's true that they haven't quite resolved their political scenario yet, but they have a modus vivendi there, I think, where you do have Sunnis, Shiites, and Kurds sharing government. The revenue from the oil is being shared. You're not probably going to have any kind of USS Missouri signing. That's just not in the cards for this kind of situation, but the situation there has stabilized.
Secretary Gates visits Baghdad. 25 people die in car bombings. This morning on the news, we hear about a female suicide bomber, 16 people killed. We know about the millions of people now put in refugee status, leaving the country.
And they're coming back.
It's Dave, you can't believe that.
Well, I do.
The country is a complete mess, and the Bush administration has done little to fix the political problems, the sectarian problems. The Bush administration strategy is not working.
Yeah, Tony, you'll like this. React to this. Vice President Dick Cheney predicts Iraq will be a self-governing democracy by the time he leaves office, calling the current U.S. surge strategy a remarkable success story that will be studied for years to come. That's according to the Politico.
You know, anybody who would believe anything Dick Cheney says at this point.
He said when he's ready to leave office, and that's another 12 years, okay?
So he's 12 years.
I believe Vice President Cheney was the one who said that the insurgency was in its last throes. They would be greeting us with roses. The vice president's credibility is even lower than the president's, if that's possible.
Yeah, let me take another call on this. Steve in New Auburn. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I guess I wanted to talk about the philosophy behind militarism. One of your guests said that, you know, the president has to keep his military options open in order to bring, you know, Iran to the negotiating table, but then questioned the need for Iran to develop nuclear weapons. Well, obviously, if you want a big stick, nuclear weapons is sure it.
Well, you're committing the sin of equivalency, though, my friend. I mean, it's less like saying, well, because we had, America had a lot of industrial might and we could produce Sherman tanks and whatnot, that certainly Adolf Hitler was therefore qualified to do so too. I think when you've got a government here that denies reality, when a government that denies that there was such a thing as a Holocaust, when a government that makes friends with all the bad boys of the world scene, from Hugo Chavez in Venezuela to Sung in North Korea, has troubled its neighbors. I don't know that you can really say that, well, we're two peas in a pod.
I think Steve makes an excellent point, though. I mean, if you look at some countries that the Bush administration does not have on their bad guy list, like Pakistan, I mean, Pakistan, a repressive government, and yet they have nuclear power. And so you could see a scenario where the repressive Iranian regime thinks, well, the only way you get the Bush administration not to mess with you, if you will, is to develop nuclear weapons. I'm certainly not justifying that. I think that there needs to be a reduction in nuclear weapons globally. But you certainly can understand why.
No, I can't.
When a country has been labeled as part of an axis of evil and sees its neighbor, who the United States supported during the Iraq-Iran war, when they see them invaded, of course you'd see why there'd be a movement toward development of weapons.
I wanted to ask you both about comments that Pat Buchanan made on this program and on some national television programs. He's outraged over this report on Iran's nuclear capability, and he says it is preposterous that the president only learned of this last week, saying he should have certainly have known about this a lot earlier than that. And he wants Joe Biden to quit the presidential race and go back to Washington and start holding hearings into what did the president know and when did he know it?
I agree with Pat Buchanan.
Hey,
yeah. Actually, he's been pretty good on NAFTA also. But the thing is, Joy, he's correct. I mean, this is one of those situations where if the president didn't know, that's probably worse than if he did know. I mean, how can he be that completely out of touch with intelligence chairs that he hired? So if he didn't know, that's worse than if he did know.
Dave?
Well, you're talking about the nuclear capacity of
Iran.
Well, you know, I think that's so dependent on various intercepted materials, and close to the most recent piece of information you got is always the most dispositive. And I mean, there's a couple of Iran watchers who maintain that right now that Iraq is busy installing 3,000 gas centrifuges at its plant in Natanz. These, if they operate for a year, they make enriched uranium. You don't need enriched uranium for anything but a bomb. I mean, they got a heavy water reactor at a research center in Iraq. So there's a lot of thought here. I don't think we can say for certain what Iraq is or what Iran is doing, except that I would not, unless you want to say, hey, you know, we trust them. If you know. Ahmadinejad, your word is gold. So, I don't do that. I can't do that.
This was one of the topics in the Democratic presidential candidate debate in Iowa this week. It was a debate sponsored by National Public Radio. Talked mainly about Iran and immigration and China. Dennis Kucinich had this to say about Iran.
See, when people say all options are on the table, as the three senators have, they actually encouraged President Bush and licensed his rhetoric. And what I'm saying is that I'm the only one here who, in Congress, repeatedly challenged, in every chance, in every legislation, repeatedly challenged this mindset that said all options are on the table and that Iran had nuclear weapons programs. And I'm the only one here who can make that claim.
That's right, Tony Palmieri.
It's true that Kucinich is the only one who could make that claim. I mean, lots of Democrats, including presidential candidates, have been enabling the Bush administration on some key foreign policy issues.
So, Tony, do you have your tickets to the Kucinich inauguration yet? I mean, there's got
to
be a reason why
this... to win the nomination, but at least you know he can stand tall and say that he has been.
Why do you
suppose... he has had the courage of his convictions through the course of his congressional career, and you got to give him credit for that much.
Well, you know, I give credit to a lot of people who are crazy, but I mean,
crazy. He's turned out to be right on just about every policy issue.
Then why is he not going to get your party's nomination?
First of all, I'm not in the Democratic Party, number one.
Oh, you're green.
Former
huh?
Green.
Yes.
Although I did run as a Democrat in 1996. Well, I will give you that much.
You know, I used to be a Democrat, so.
I cannot explain the psychology of Democratic Party primary voters, but I think most will tell you that Kucinich does really represent the heart of what the party is supposed to represent.
Single digits. That's my prediction.
Yeah. Another thing that happened at that debate is Hillary Clinton took some guff on her vote that labeled the Revolutionary Army in Iran a terrorist organization. But she says that that was a good move. It was not to authorize any military action against Iran, but to stop Iran from interfering with the war in Iraq.
And Joy, you're looking at me right now, so you can testify that I'm not foaming at the mouth at the very mention of the name of Hillary Clinton. But that's I think a lot of people's problem with Hillary is that this is this triangulation thing here where I did this, but I meant that, I said this, and I did that, and you know you can't track her down. I tell you what, I don't know if John McCain is my guy, but that guy stood tall and he said we got to have the surge while Rumsfeld was still a Secretary of War, let's call him, and he stood by his guns all this time, and I give him mounds of credit, and I don't always agree with him. He certainly put down, I think, both Giuliani and Mitt Romney on, he said, this discussion on immigration saddens me. That man has courage, and I think when you come right down to it, I think what people in America want is someone with authenticity. May not agree with them all the time, and that's fine. But this person is believable, he's real, and he sticks by his guns. I suppose by that standard, you could say Dennis Kucinich, but Kucinich ain't going to get it.
You know, I agree with Dave on this, this search for authenticity. In fact, if you look at McCain, when his campaign really did falter and slip, is when he lost that authenticity and started to schmooze with the so-called religious right. And now that he seems to be going back to the old McCain, which is this kind of like independent and straight talk express, and I disagree with him on most issues, but I think his campaign is making a comeback once he's gone back to the old McCain. I also think Barack Obama is doing well largely because he is perceived as being one of the more authentic candidates. So I agree with Dave. There is a real search out there for authentic candidates.
Well, speaking of the religious right, first of all, a poll out this morning shows Mike Huckabee has surged from nowhere to second place nationally. Christian evangelicals given a lot of the credit for that boost. He's running ads calling himself the Christian leader. What do you think of that, Tony Palmieri?
I think Huckabee has done what Fred Thompson was supposed to do. I think the Republicans, many of them, had figured that Fred Thompson would come in and get all the red states. Hillary or Barack or John Edwards or whoever would get the Northeast and the Northwest and the West, and then Ohio and Florida would be the battlegrounds. I mean, I think they thought Fred Thompson would be a replay of Bush Kerry. But it's turned out that Fred Thompson has been kind of like the dead man walking. I mean, no inspiration, just a terrible candidate. And Huckabee, it turns out, has been doing this. And, you know, I could see a scenario where Huckabee gets the Republican nomination, and it is almost a replay of 2004. Blue state versus red state, with the Midwest and Florida being the battleground.
You see that happening, Dave?
Well, actually, I'm going to agree with Tony on this one. I think I owe you a couple. I tell you what, though, about Fred Thompson, I like him a lot, too. This whole thing, this whole election is a marathon, not a sprint. Not that I coined that term, but if Fred keeps in there, he'll be fine. I think, you know, whoever is in the lead, Hillary saw her, I think her polls, I think she lost about 5 or 6 points. Giuliani was taken down a couple of steps or two. Huckabee has surged. He thinks well on his feet. I've said, though, he is a lot of true conservatives, political conservatives, don't like him because he's a religious fundamentalist and a big government fundamentalist as well. We'll see what he apparently pardoned a rapist in Arkansas, but he's very likable. And we mentioned authenticity, but I think likability too. The kind of guy that's going to come into your living room every so often and talk to you, that's what you want, the FDR kind of thing.
Yeah, and let's listen to Mitt Romney yesterday talking about faith in America.
Given our grand tradition of religious tolerance and liberty, some wonder whether there are any questions regarding an aspiring candidate's religion that are appropriate. I believe there are, and I'll answer them today.
Well, he went on to say that his Mormon faith should not matter in his campaign to be president. He promised in that speech that he would serve the interests of the nation, not any church. What did you think of what he had to say, Dave Blaska?
Well, I know there's some people who don't think that Mormonism is a real Christian religion, but neither is, you know, you could say neither is Unitarianism. You know, what the difference, I think, between there's a fact that an essay that said that Mitt Romney is no JFK is that you had organized, I mean, you had the Southern Baptist Convention come out against any Catholic as president. You had the Reverend Norman Vincent Peale, who was a I don't know if he's read anymore, but a tremendously popular author. And also Billy Graham's father-in-law, who his name escapes me, was very prominent. Billy Graham, at the last minute, pulled out, who stated that they would oppose any Catholic president. And so we've come a long way. I've always said, I thought, and I'll leave it at that, that JFK promised too much. He promised to be a bad Catholic in order to be a good president. We're all informed by our experiences, and religion is part of that. So I think religion and politics is worth discussing. Should be. It shouldn't be. It's part of who we are.
Tony?
I thought a caller in your last hour, Joy, called it right in calling Governor Romney a panderer in an empty suit. And this was more of that. I mean, this speech became necessary, of course, because of Mike Huckabee, mm-hmm. who had made all those strides in Iowa, especially among evangelicals. And I did think the governor had an opportunity to draw that proper distinction between religion and public life, and instead he, it seems like he did choose to pander to what your guest in the last hour called the culture war. And that's unfortunately, I don't think that Mitt Romney ultimately is going to be harmed by the fact that he's a Mormon. He is going to be harmed by the fact that many people do not sense him as somebody with political conviction.
Right.
That he seems like someone who will say what he has to say to get elected. And quite frankly, we've had too much of that. And I, you know, it kind of flies in the face of that authenticity that Dave was talking about earlier.
I couldn't agree more. If Hillary is the least authentic candidate on your side, or what used to be your side, I would say, and I've said this in my blog, Mitt Romney does strike me as an empty suit. This year's fashion, I'm going to be tougher on immigration than thou, and it just doesn't sit well with me. And I used to be pro-choice, and you can become pro-life, but I think it's all too convenient for him.
Speaking of religion and politics, let's just talk briefly about the State Assembly. The subcommittee of the Assembly this week voted 8-1 in favor of Democrat Marlon Schneider's proposal to rename the big tree that's in the Capitol Rotunda the Holiday Tree. It's now called the Holiday Tree. Rename it officially the Wisconsin State Christmas Tree. Now, the full Assembly takes this up next week, and maybe it'll pass. Should it, Dave Blaska?
Well, if they put a proviso in there for the German speakers and call it Tannenbaum, I think it will be passed then, yes.
Tony?
The culture war comes to Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I really think that Marlon Schneider should be embarrassed. I mean, this is the legislature.
You know Marlon Schneider.
this is the legislature that held the budget hostage for months. No movement on reform of the politics down there, very little movement on so many issues crucial to the state, and yet this comes forward. And, you know, these are the kind of votes, by the way, that members of the legislature just hate. They hate going on record with things like this, and yet I think it probably will pass. If it passed 8-1 in that committee, it probably will pass the full body.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about what else is on the agenda for the state legislature next week and what's not, and other issues. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Talking about the news of the week with Tony Palmieri, an associate professor of communications at UW Oshkosh, and Dave Blaska, a blogger and contributing writer to Isthmus, Madison's alternative newspaper. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up, Kathleen Dunn is with you, talking with her two guests about the latest national intelligence estimate about Iran stopping its nuclear weapons program in 2003. And that's coming up after 9. We're reviewing the news of the week with Dave Blaska and Tony Palmieri, and Chris in Milwaukee is our next caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, go ahead.
Hi. Did the governor call a special session of the legislature for campaign finance reform and then decided it would not be about campaign finance reform, or did I mishear that?
The governor did call the legislature into special session to take up campaign finance reform, and we learned yesterday that the campaign finance reform will not be taken up. The Senate leader, Russ Decker, said there needs to be some specific legislation proposed, and there should be public hearings on this stuff and not just passed in a hurry. So they'll wait until, I guess, they come back in January. Was that the right decision, Dave Blaska?
Yeah, I'm a real agnostic. You want to talk about the culture wars on campaign finance reform. Every time we have these reforms, the situation gets worse and worse. I mean, I can still remember the reforms after Watergate, and, you know, within the Democratic Party especially, and they wound up with candidates like George McGovern instead of Harry Truman. So this is something that does take some time. I know that one of the calls was for taxpayer financing of Supreme Court races, mm-hmm. which I call, now we socialized medicine is one thing, but now we're going to have socialized politics. So I think that Russ Decker probably, and this is everyone is in favor of campaign finance reform, by the way. It's just when you talk about particulars.
What do you think of this, Tony?
I think public hearings do need to be held on it. So, I mean, I don't know what could have been accomplished in one day on December 11th. You know, I have to give the governor credit for calling for this. You know, he is like 5 years too late, unfortunately. When he first got elected, he said he was going to clean up the system. But we badly need reform. I mean, so many of our assembly districts are uncompetitive. I mean, the districts have been drawn in such a way that Republicans or Democrats have a lock on them. I mean, we saw what happened during the last budget cycle where people are raising money, legislators are raising money while the budget is in session. I mean, if they can't reform just that, something is desperately wrong. I'm hoping that whenever these hearings take place, that reforms can be put in place before the elections of 2008. I mean, otherwise, it seems to me we're headed for more just very nasty, out-of-control spending districts, especially in Senate races.
Yeah. Do you think public financing of Supreme Court races is a good or bad idea, Tony?
It's a wonderful idea. I mean, we need to do something to try and guarantee the integrity of that bench. And the situation involving Judge Ziegler, I mean, that is just the textbook case of why the way we fund the Supreme Court is badly in need of reform here.
Yeah, you think it's, Dave Blaska, good for these Supreme Court candidates to be getting a bunch of this special interest money to run campaigns?
No, I don't, actually. You know, I don't know why we elect state Supreme Court justices. I think most, I know the governor of California appoints. We obviously, the president appoints. I think the governor ought to be, and we'd have to amend the Constitution, the governor ought to appoint a Supreme Court justice, because you know, if you're running for Supreme Court, you're going to say, well, I can't talk about a case because it might come up and da-da-da. So what's the point of having an election? That's the real reform. You know, people talk about the governor appointing members of the DNR board who would then he does now, who would then appoint the DNR secretary. They've got their focus, their aim is on the wrong place. They ought to be talking about appointing a Supreme Court justice and with confirmation by the state Senate.
The other thing that the legislature is not going to be taking up, that the governor asked the legislature to take up, a couple of different issues. They will not debate a proposed statewide smoking ban next week, as Governor Doyle had asked them to. Senate Majority Leader Russ Decker says he intends to work with senators to broker a compromise that might be an exemption for taverns. Dave, what do you think?
Oh, boy, this is so old, I guess. Yeah, fine. Okay, I'm good with it. Whatever. I'm almost to the point where I don't smoke. I used to. I wish I quit a lot of years earlier, but I would say people can still make choices.
Yeah. Tony?
Well, Minnesota and Illinois have already done this, and so it's unfortunate that once again this legislature just can't move. And you know, it also says a lot about Jim Doyle. I find it just incredible that the legislature just won't move on so much that he asks for. I mean, unlike former Governor Thompson, I mean, I got to give him that much. Thompson,
there you go.
You know, Thompson was often able to move the legislature. He had the level of popularity to do that. Governor Doyle has not had that same success. In fact, the legislature often openly defies the governor, and I think that's too bad. Governor Doyle, at this point in his governorship, ought to be able to move the legislature on things like campaign finance reform and the smoking ban.
Yeah. Well, I think first you have to move the public, and then you can move the legislature.
I think the public, Dave, has been moved on both of those issues.
You know what the legislature will vote on next week is the proposal to ban the so-called Frankenstein veto. So the legislature will vote on a proposal to limit the governor's veto powers. Is that a good idea, Dave Blaska?
Well, we've steadily retracted from the Vanna-White veto that Tommy Thompson did enjoy, where he could actually remove digits and letters to Governor Doyle has words. Now they're going to say you can't, the proposal is you cannot create new sentences. You can eliminate words. So he could eliminate, even if this were passed, he could eliminate the word not. So the state shall not do this. He could take the word. But that's fine. Anytime you have a partial veto, if you're going to have a partial veto, you do need to have that ability. So I think it is a step in the right direction. It still gives the governor a lot of power. And I think I wish the president of the United States had that kind of power.
Tony?
Yeah, well, I agree. I mean, I think Wisconsin governors, whether they're Democrat or Republican, have way too much budget power. And I think the Frankenstein veto bill would do something to limit that. So, yeah, it's a good idea.
It's the Frankenstein veto.
Yeah. I'm going to share an email from, well, the story is that the state will pay more than $228,000 in legal fees for a state employee wrongly imprisoned for 4 months. The state claims board this week ruled that the state must pay all the legal fees and expenses sought by Georgia Thompson. She was convicted last year of steering a travel contract to a company with political ties to Governor Doyle. She served 4 months in prison before an appeals court ruled she did not commit a crime and ordered her free. So we got an email from Dave and Baraboo concerned about the precedent set by this. Are you concerned about any precedent set by this, Tony Palmieri?
I'm not sure what precedent he's referring to, the fact that the legal fees would be paid.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she was vindicated by a higher court, and my understanding is that the ordeal, obviously hit her financially. And so I understand the reasoning for compensating the legal fees. I mean, she was vindicated.
Well, plus, Tony, she was acting under color of her state job. She was doing
right.
The job that she was hired to do, and that is to vet state contracts through the bidding process. The low bidder was chosen. Mm-hmm. She followed all the rules. So if I sued her because I didn't get the bid, the state attorney general would defend that case. So there's nothing different here. And the difference is the federal government doesn't do this and doesn't compensate. Maybe they should. Obviously, they should. The precedent here, if there's any precedent at all, is that it's a federal case. However, there was state attorney general involvement in this case, so I think that does fall within. There's no new precedent here. Per
I mean, se. The real thing that needs to be investigated more deeply is whether the U.S. attorney in this case was pressured by the Karl Rove crowd to go after the Doyle administration in an election year. That has been touched on in some of the press, but I think that needs to be looked in more closely.
Yeah. I'm going to actually go to Marty in Douglas County. Marty, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I'm going to take this back nationally. Another shooting this week, another young man out in Nebraska who thought he'd make his name by murdering people and then killing himself. And at first I thought, that's the story. That's what we need to be talking about. Yeah. But I think what really we need to be talking about is the fact that we're not talking about it. And I don't just mean you guys on this show. I mean, it gets a 10-minute mention on the news, and then we're on to the next thing, which is this election that, good grief, it's a year ahead, you know. If we only took as much time to talk about why these young men are killing people, I don't have any answers. Your screener, Joy, said, well, what would you do? I have no idea. This is not my area of expertise.
Oh, yeah. And it certainly is a tragic story. Usually we concentrate on political issues, but that's one of the reasons why I didn't bring it up. But
I think
it's
Tony can make this political, Tony. Give it a try.
I think Marty is right on target. I mean, this kind of topic needs some national urgency. We're starting to treat these things like they are routine, mm-hmm. like they are supposed to happen. And obviously it does touch on guns, mm-hmm. and our national politicians don't want to get close to that issue. I don't hear any candidate I understand that this individual used an assault rifle. Where did he get it? How did he get it?
Yeah, I think he got it from, he stole it from his stepdad,
yeah.
What I read.
Yeah, and where did his stepdad mm-hmm. get it? I mean, the issue of assault mm-hmm. rifles, who has them and why? I mean, if you want to have a serious national discussion of this topic, that issue is going to have to come up.
And yet these guns are banned. So, I mean,
yeah.
So tell me what your gun control legislation did.
I don't know, Dave, but I mean, this is why what Marty is saying makes sense.
If one person in that mall had been carrying a concealed weapon, I don't know what the laws of Nebraska are. I actually made a mental note to check. But, you know, I have so many responsibilities with my blog,
yeah.
Which we haven't mentioned in 45 minutes here, my Blaska blog on isthmus.com. But if one person had been carrying concealed weapon, he probably could have reduced the slaughter count.
Dave, after Virginia Tech, I asked all of my students here at UW Oshkosh, would you feel a lot safer in this classroom if all of us were carrying weapons? I couldn't find one person who said yes. You know, the idea that we'd feel more comfortable or be more safe if everybody was packing heat, I don't buy it.
Yeah.
Well, but most other states do. Right.
Well, and I'd like to see the evidence that they are any safer than Wisconsin.
Well, would we feel any safer if there was a state law requiring better police training and such regard. This was a story in the relatives of the Crandon mass murder victims have invited a group of state lawmakers to their town to talk about better police training and
mental health screening. I think they're talking about, and you know, I guess they want to. I don't know. I'd like to take that kind of test because I'd wonder if I'd pass sometimes. But they want to do some mental health screening. I think, and I forget the fellow's name at Virginia Tech, or something like that. He was. Of South Korean descent, but he had a clear track record of mental health treatment and problems, and his essays were crazier than that teachers union blogger, and he did what he did. This fellow in Crandon, unfortunately, I mean, I thought too, was awful young, 20 years old to be a sheriff's deputy, but. By the testimony of that small knit community, he wasn't all that unusual as a person. So, are you going to find that kind of thing? I just don't think you are, and it's going to. I certainly feel their pain, as they say.
Yeah, Senator Dave Hansen crafting a bill requiring mental evaluations for police. Tony,
I think it's a good idea, and in fact, I think most Wisconsinites thought that we already had something like that in place. People find it incredible that we did not have that kind of screening and testing for individuals in law enforcement. So I expect that this will pass the legislature quite easily.
Tony, as long as they don't force that kind of screening for bloggers, right?
Yep, exactly.
You know, we only have a minute or so to go, but right now I think the U.S. Senate is in session looking at the energy bill that was passed in the House yesterday. A filibuster was expected, a threatened presidential veto. This energy bill does a lot of things, including increasing, boosting fuel efficiency standards for our vehicles. And I have Dave Blaska just kind of shaking his head. So maybe, Tony, what do you think of this?
I don't really know enough about the bill, Joy, but I would say that in the Senate these days, the filibuster is really being overused, and it's time for government at all levels to start making some decisions that benefit the population at large rather than the special interests who control.
Well, 1 minute to go. Dave Blaska, I bet you have an opinion on this one. Brett Favre named 2007 Sportsman of the Year by Sports Illustrated.
Where I work, there are at least two full-length, life-size posters of Brett Favre on women managers' offices. And I'll tell you what, this guy, I am in awe of him. I always have been. He's the Babe Ruth, I think, of the NFL. I really believe that. And we'll pinch ourselves someday in the old folks' home by saying, well, I remember when Brett Favre did. So he is absolute. I want to see a postage stamp on him, too, by the way.
All right. Do you want to disagree with that, Tony, in 30 seconds?
No, not at all.
All right. Thanks very much, Tony, for being with us.
Thank you.
And thanks to Dave Blaska.
You betcha.
Dave Blaska, blogger. You can find that blog at Blaska Blog. He's a contributor, contributing writer to Isthmus. And Tony Palmieri is associate professor of communications at UW Oshkosh and a media columnist for The Valley Scene. Thanks to Leo Duran and Karen Prager for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.